increase in leaves to order at 11:36 a.m. on Thursday, February 24th. It was present our vice chair of the House of Representatives, Justice Armstrong, and myself to respond to the letter and have a point to end of business. Thank you today for Building Secretary Sophia Kelly, who's here to join you as well, and Governor Doug Bridges for joining us this morning in committee to this morning, 106.
So looking at slide 12, for example, of the PowerPoint on the bill, it says that in just a few years, there would be $280 million excess revenue above and beyond the basic student allocation. Now, we may change that. So there's only going to be less than that. So, as I recommended in 2013, when I was a freshman year, an extended school year, an 80-day school year, which only happened 70 days because of in-service. That's pretty typical in the country. Although it is a full 10 days behind Great Britain and probably 30 days behind Japan. And if we're going to be serious about education, then we need to be serious about education. So, I guess what I'm saying is, someone might hear my comments and say, Representative Washington doesn't want to transfer to public schools. I actually would be on steroids, to use the imagery. But I describe how, in a formulaic way, very clear, designated way, what it would be for. And so I think that that's something that needs to be addressed. Sustainability and unpredictability. That being said, I apologize. I have some other questions, but he's on to another committee, so we can get us over there.
should come to the recognizing Representative Eastman to join us at 11:40 a.m. Representative Stewart.
And yes, thank you, Manager, for my time to comment on this Library Board bill. And I see this bill as really outstanding, top priority for the state of Alaska, which is public education. That's sort of the same old to families, to businesses, that we're serious about economic development, we're serious about training our workforce, but we're serious about letting people know that Alaska is a good place to be for children for their education. And I guess I get that I'm talking about President Justice and President Wall about the umbrella needs that some months have. Critical retirement, like our retirement is like the number one issue that we need to take care of teacher retirement. And so, welcome to future discussions. But to me, this is making a statement about what our most treasured resource is, our children and our youth, and need our government. And if we haven't paid attention at all to the last revenue, the downward pressure we've been doing against schools. When you look at inflation and average amount of revenue, it's about $26 million statewide. And just every year, the city built for the first round of bills that went to $173 million. And that really sounds just to us in inflation, not our learning initiatives, not our learning, which we know is a game changer, and our workforce priorities, UCTV. I think anybody's doing most, and I thank you for the priority that this place is on for the education. Thanks so much for all the trouble that will come from saying to the
board. Thank you. That's an excellent step to about the effectiveness of this particular legislation. I think there is a point early on in the process of public education where inadequate funding will lead to poor outcomes. I think this committee and the legislature as a whole tend to focus a lot on the funding and not so much on the outcomes, not so much on the performance. And so, if we're trying to send a signal for parents that Alaska is a great place for education, then I think the best signal we can send is discourse and performance. Unfortunately, we're not doing so well enough, and I don't think we can make up for that with funding. I think we've actually gotten to a point in asking our schools if not quite up and continue to fund them or increase funding, that you're actually putting downward pressure on performance by maintaining the status quo. Unfortunately, the status quo is just terrible in Alaska.
All right, thank you very much. I appreciate her because that was this bill is a little bit, it's a big policy problem. As I mentioned, being a deputy of Arkansas, although I'm certainly looking forward to working with the finance committee members, for the refinements of that bill moving forward. I will look just because the draft is statutory for the $1 billion fiscal gap next year, and clearly that's something that we just can't afford to do anymore. And I think that the people of Alaska deserve some transparency about what kind of payment they can expect. That also think that it would resolve a political problem for the legislature, which is that every year we're converting on an annual basis. A lot of folks feel like they're frustrated at working in the statutory formula. I believe that we can afford our statutory formulas without them. I want to create some fiscal stability for the future of Alaska in person to talk about education and the importance of education and how this bill could intersect with our policy proposals that are before the legislature right now. There are a series of bills that seek to address some of the education challenges in our state. I think before I talk about this, I want to point out that we spent $500 per child to meet every day in fiscal year 08 for public education, and we just are missing allocation dollars for people not according to inflation. So that my oldest daughter, and it's almost 34 years old, she was 10 years old in 2008. story of a couple of dollars to do that. House bill said they can vote pretty nice. Companies do not at least send them to adjust for all the inflation that's taking place in the last few years. House bill 273 would attack the base food allocation to inflation moving forward. And I think those are really important because the reason that our institutional items are less by in the rent and states have not that our educational outcomes are actually much worse than they were back in 2008. For example, the other states have made a strategic investment and we have conservative state Democrats potentially investing in things like pre-K. You know, children seems like those schools in Alaska, and those other states made those investments and evidence-based strategies like evidence-based reading programs, pre-K. The only state in the nation that doesn't have a government benefit retirement plan for educators. And that's the reason that they need more educational professional retention. So other states have made strategic investments that prioritize public education. Essentially, the performance metrics of this. I mean, it's really important that we start addressing the erosion of our purchasing power in adult education. And also, I'll say that the many of those evidence-based reading programs are pretty good. There's a fine benefit for them. We can address all of these in other legislation. And my intention to allow local jurisdictions across the state to be able to turn for themselves how they would like to spend these additional dollars. That's the reason that I introduced House Bill 259. And I think everybody for the work that we see some over here, we're going to see some a lot more in the coming months. With that, I happily can see our motion.
There's one also HB 259, work order number 32, passed LS 1362. Slash A, implementing the tax recommendations in this one.
So, thank you. It seems like Jackson House Bill 259 moves our committee. We will sign up for the work at the end of the committee meeting today. We'll make sure we get our friends meeting and we're adding our time. I want to welcome Representative Strategy out of the way from AAM this morning. All right. So, next up, we're going to go to a presentation by Minnesota Finance Director Alexa Painter on inactive funds. Hold on just a second. I've been informed that we have a drug sensitivity on the work. Go ahead.
Thank you, Director Sponsor. I'm sure I've heard about the drug sensitivity to visit. I've asked to discuss inactive funds in the context of House Bill 223 and also just more broadly. And in particular, I'm going to touch on the impact of the CBR's vehicle to the fund balances because that changed the picture a bit from a year ago when this legislation was drafted. So, before we get started, I want to differentiate between funds and fund codes. So each fund source that we spend in the budget has a fund code, which is a four-digit identifier that legislative finance assigns. And I'll start with the one. So it's the CBR, that's 1001. And the latest we had was established in this current year's budget is 1272. These fund codes often come from a particular fund within the state treasury. But sometimes they are used to just identify a revenue source that's not kept in a particular fund in the treasury or in the general fund. So it's a fund source, not necessarily an actual fund in the treasury. Each fund in the treasury also has a code. If it's one that is coming in the budget, that's the same code as our code that we use in the budget. There's a lot of accounting codes as well that are not spent in the budget. So that's code of funds that either flow without further appropriation or roll up to a fund code. So sometimes you'll have a situation where we use the fund code that's more broad than what the accounting system does. So you'll see these other fund codes. Usually they serve the three. So you can identify the difference if you're looking at a to find out the existence of sorry, the one of the experiment of the existence of sorry, three, dilated after the experiment by them. And if you have resources, if you want to learn more about funds, the Department of Administration, Affairs and Finance has some information on their website. It's kind of more technical. On the website, the finance website, you have our fund code kind of repository of history. So you have, you can sort through them on that website and look at measurements of state and all which are bad, look at them by active or inactive and by fund group. And each price will have a description of the fund and its history. And that's a pretty good resource if you want to learn more about them. Also, if you're looking at one of our budget reports online, if you click the fund code, you can get to that fund source report that has the background about it. So, if you want to learn more about various funds, we have a lot of resources to spend hours for that very fun if you want. So, of our 272 fund codes that we have assigned, 106 of them are currently marked as inactive. We marked them as inactive for a variety of reasons, generally when they're not being used in the budget for a significant amount of period of time that we don't expect them to be. So sometimes that's because the actual fund itself was repealed by the legislature. So, for example, last year was the Fordham Pool Transfer Fund. Once the Fordham Pool project was sold, there's no need to retain that fund. And so the legislature repealed that fund in 1999. Therefore, there's no money in Fund Code 1090, so it's inactive in our system. Sometimes we inactivate things because they just have, they were one offs. Sometimes we say that we established like a fund code for the federal stimulus bill in 2008 to drop the funding from that. After a while, that no longer had relevance, so we inactivate. So, then funds themselves may or is often established in statute and will remain even after the underlying program or the original purpose no longer exists. Sometimes they even keep it balanced for years on end because it's a relatively small amount, so they're just kind of grabbing it. And while there is kind of burden associated with most disclosure, there may be some efficiencies or balances from time that they're repealed. If nothing else, it's a good exercise in cleaning up our statutes so there's not these little things sitting around that cause confusion sometimes. And I understand that's the purpose of Act 1223, is to kind of clean up some of these funds that are no longer in use. However, not all inactive funds can actually be repealed. Some of them have ongoing obligations, even if the original purpose is gone. So, example of the oldest ones, like that, the Money Revolving Loan Fund has not actually given any loans since 1986. However, there's still $200,000 in that fund as a foreclosure reserve for a single remaining asset in the portfolio. So you can't actually repeal that fund until that asset has been disposed of or until the loan is completely done. So even though that fund has not been used in 36 years, it's still can't really be repealed at this point. There's others where there's ongoing past capital appropriations that are still outstanding. There's actually an example of that in this post, the Global Energy Fund. That actual fund has not really been used for its intended purposes in over 20 years, but there are still some capital projects in the fund on the books from that. So you can't just repeal the fund because those obligations remain. And so, when you're looking at which fund codes, which funds can we actually repeal, it becomes a much smaller list than the rest of all the outstanding inactive funds that are out there. And so, you know, if they were going through this bill, there were a lot of potential ones that were just too many complications to start repealing this bill, and that narrowed the list down quite a bit. And the funds will take a little bit later, but that's why I'm kind of throwing it out there. You know, it may seem simple, we'll be able to get rid of the funds that we don't need, we're done. But since the legislature often continue to appropriate funds from these or reappropriate old family projects, sometimes they can hang around much longer than you'd think. subject to the constitutional strike provision in Provision Section 32 of the Constitution, whereby at the end of the fiscal year, if the general fund owes a liability to the CPR, the general fund and the fund account are swiped to the CPR. And so several of these funds that have the same balance for many years are now empty because the FY21 sweep was not reversed. So that cleared out the balances of quite a few other old and active funds as well as non-active funds. There are still some funds that are inactive that are not subject to the sweep, often because they didn't get picked up. But agencies not further appropriation, not further balance for the goal, or because they're part of a loan fund or some other reason why they have to be kept outside the CPR. There are still some without balances, or with balances actually sweep, but it's a lot fewer, and those ones that are remain tend to be a little more complex to handle. That takes us to the next slide here, which shows the funds that we've marked as active, or the President of Finance has marked as inactive, but we're swapped in FY21. We have the estimated total swaps, which are the actual amount of days here. It's the budget of Finance has come out. As a result, we'll point out the largest is the Renewable Energy Fund, which I'll get to in the slide. Some of these are very small amounts, maybe $145. The next largest is the Municipal Capital Project Matching Program. That's a program that hasn't been used, I think, since the early 2000s. The legislature did spend some of those funds from that fund and they incorporated community project matching grant fund for other purposes, but still left a small balance in that and that been swapped. So these amounts were just sitting out there, could have been used for the purpose of the general fund, not had to move to CDR. And so those balances are no longer available. Next slide shows the inactive funds that are not subject to the sweep that have a balance. And so several of these are not subject to the sweep because they could be found out for their appropriation or loan funds. The largest one is the Casco Dana, even on the Kavala loan fund. This one has actually already been repealed by statute, so the reason the balance is still there is because they're outside the capital projects. So that one, the statutory reference no longer exists. There are still some outstanding obligations to fund them, kind of remain on the books. And eventually, when those capital projects are going to be cleared out. The next largest is the United States Housing Finance Corporation's capital fund, or the ACC account, the Housing Capital Corporation. This one was established, it's often called the parking garage because it was established several years ago in order to be an expendable fund because it's a corporate fund. This fund was capitalized by the legislature putting money into it and then as a just appropriation and then spending it on capital projects. It was completely incorporated from capital projects, but as those projects are financed, that's brought on the back of the account. There's still quite a few outstanding projects, even though it hasn't been used in a decade or so. And so we can't completely close the books with that one, but it has no longer the first of my videos. There's no more reason to keep it other than that it's kind of handy to have is not favorable. Every garage that can be used for any purpose, it has no corporate purpose, despite being a corporate fund. It was created solely for the purpose of building the legislature. And now it's favorable. So, basically, right? And then a couple of the other funds here are double from the bills, so we'll have a little history as we get there. Yes, I think I'm trying to remember the last time we used it, but it hasn't been used a significant amount in quite a while. And the uses have been just as project labs back in, there's money available. It does spend a few GFs, so there's not really use that much advantage to choosing to spend that versus general funds on something, but that has been used. The initial capitalization is a little like that getting out of most of the state in the first few years. So this fund has not been used, I think, in at least 20 years. This isn't done in the bill, but it discusses with the department. It's not an active use. There is no curriculum improvement but practices fund that was established, although never used as well. So it's sort of a similar goal. This is an example of a fund that had no source of revenue, so it was just to put a bunch of people put money and then spend it on a particular purpose. It's not really in keeping with our constitutional system and our dedicated funds, so putting money into that and then it wasn't really an endowment. It just never really served much of a purpose or hasn't for a long time for the legislation to have that fund. The rest of the $300,000 was very important. I think when we discussed this with the department, it hadn't been used at all in at least a couple of decades. So that's why the fund comes predates the time of our religious system from 2000. Okay, so I'll go through the fund proposed for appeal investments in 2023 and provide some background on these funds. They actually have them open into the policy questions here, but I'll just provide some history. Most of this just comes from our fund code write-ups that are on our website if you want more information. So starting with the viability of the fund, the removal of all loss, as well, this is subject to the single fix, that the balance is currently zero. This was established in 1986 for the purpose of meeting reliable energy needs, including projects for retrofitting state-owned buildings and facilities for energy conservation. And so it was originally established by appropriating $412.6 million to the fund, but it does not have an ongoing source of revenue. So it's just, you know, in the 80s when we had significant surpluses, was putting money aside for a particular purpose. The remaining balance of that fund was appropriated in FY 2012. And I think it had been mostly expended in the back in the 90s, but there were some amounts remaining after FY 2012. As projects have lapsed back to the fund, it rebuilt the balance up to about $3.5 million before the super state brought that back to zero. And so it's a fund with no ongoing source of revenue and then no money. It's kind of an empty endowment. You can put money back in there and start spending it for that purpose, but since my original capitalization was gone, doesn't really serve much of a purpose anymore. As I noted earlier, there are still some capital projects outstanding from that, but they need to repeat a little more complicated and they need to be delayed.
Okay,
question.
Yeah. Okay.
Going on to the next one, code 1065, the Rural Electrification Revolving Loan Fund. This was established as a fund within the Alaska Energy Authority back in 1981. With a $6.5 million capitalization at the time. The intent of this fund was to make loans available to rural utilities to not have access to a different fund source at the time, the Rural Electrification Administration, or REA loan programs, or having difficulty obtaining RIA from loans because of federal reductions to that program. This program is largely supplanted by a different lending agency, the Electrical Service Extension Fund. And so the loans, at that point, no new loans were given out after that new fund was created. Payments on outstanding loans continue to be received until our final updates. And rather than being thrown back into new loans, they were typically appropriated for electricity-related capital projects. And so there's no outstanding funds in this money in this fund or any outstanding loans from this fund. Seeing no questions, I have 1086.
Outstanding projects that are out there. The slide says that it's essentially an empty endowment, which is correct.
So it's empty because there's no unobligated balance. There's still some capital projects outstanding from it, but there's no funds available for any other purpose. When those projects are completed, there may be some small amounts of balances that are back in the fund, or they may be reappropriated if that those funds are completely expended.
If the funds are not entirely expended, if the dollars are not completely expended,
it depends on whether we had a CDO sweep, reverse sweep thing. If there was no reverse sweep, the funds simply had to go to CDR. If there was a reverse sweep, it would be a little ambiguous what should happen with the fund. Where if they were lapsing back to a fund that no longer exists, it is a little confusing to know exactly whether they're still there or whether they would go back into the general fund. We would probably recommend putting language in the budget as those labs to appropriate them back to the general fund if we are not relying on the CBR sweep to help them out.
Yeah, I think you can leave in the final song recommending the officer to pass from the central level. Right. Any other questions?
Yeah, so I'll just like to call the energy fund. And so this was created with an ongoing source of revenue first, which is 40% of the four-day pool fund, which was consisted of loan payments from the Alaska Energy Authority. However, in 1989, the legislation redirected those payments to power cost stabilization endowment fund, which essentially took away that ongoing source of revenue from this fund. There was a single grant that was made out of these funds in 1986 with Columbia County. The remaining balance of the fund was appropriated back to the general fund in 2006. The fund no longer has a source of revenue because of that change back in 1999, and there's no fund balance remaining because of the appropriation back in 2006.
Any
questions? 1260, the Curriculum Improvement and Best Practices Fund. This is by far the newest fund on the list. So back in 2018, the legislature passed a bill that created a one-time capitalization of this fund to fund a three-year pilot program to test the appropriateness and effectiveness of curriculum. So the fiscal number called for $19.5 million to get into the fund in FY19. But the number has four taxation. The capitalization was given a delayed effective date to FY20. So the funds did not go into the fund. FY19 is estimated to be back up to 19 or 2020. The following year, the legislature repealed that capitalization before it happened. So the money never actually went into the fund, and so the fund was never used. And that essentially defunded that bill to test and do the pilot program for new curriculum. So that work didn't really occur, and this fund was never actually used because of that repeal. This fund is designed for pretty specific for their power programs, and whether it's specific to the purposes of that bill, this Senator McKinney's bill from 4 years ago, I think that would be an appropriate place. If your goal is just to more generally support curriculum, then as a particular fund probably would not be as appropriate since it's tied back to that statute by the 3-year pilot program.
Thank you. Any questions?
Okay, the next one is one that we've not talked about spending the budget since we've had a budget system here, rather than the 3-3-2-5 in Alaska Historical Commission and the receipts account. It's subject to the CPR streaks, so the fund balance is zero. You've spent funds of the Alaska Historical Commission with the DNR, so long when use of by the commission and all the time to really ask them about it. The commission was not aware of the program that even still existed, but not has been used in well over 20 years. So that one is code 3206, the fuel emergency fund. This one does have a balance towards $2,000, which was used in the early 1980s for the purpose of when the governor determined that the shortage of fuel in a community was sufficiently severe to justify state assistance to be raised to any political supervision. This fund would be used to purchase emergency supplies of fuel for that municipality or the local government. In 2000, the disaster relief fund statute was amended to add fuel shortages and allow the use for that fund. So this one is no longer necessary because that larger fund that's often ongoing uses could be used for that same purpose. So this fund has not been used since 2000. And so this fund is no longer necessary, but there's still $22,000 left for the last time it was used. This one is the Econ Valdez Wellsville Unincorporated Rural Community Grant Fund. So this was established in 1982. From the civil side, the payment from the Alliance of Pipeline Company to the state of Alaska, starting from Econ Valdez Wellsville. We're probably all familiar with the EVOS Fund and Econ Valdez Wellsville Trust. It comes from the federal funds made by Epson, and those are maintained for long-term purposes. This was part of the payment that was used for grants specifically for climate mitigation at the time. This particular subfund was for grants to unincorporated rural communities in the affected area. Those grants had right out to those communities, and there are no funds remaining from the civil side. While there are still funds remaining in the criminal side, this 29-year-old fund has been fully. This is the last one, the Alaska Affordable Energy Fund. So this one is another one that's never been used. It's designated to receive 20% of royalties from a future LNG project, Alaska Liquefied National Natural Gas Project, part of past legislation relating to an LNG project. It was established for the purpose of developing energy infrastructure for areas that do not have access to the LNG line. As we all know, we do not have an AKLG line at this point, since the fund has never been used. We could keep it on the books and take that in for a curse, or perhaps it is well to learn my voice, so it would be a place to play over it comes up. Great, with that, the trainer concludes our presentation. I'm happy to answer any questions for our trainer.
Thank you very much. Are there any questions for Mr. Holder before we move on?
Just on the last slide, is that the last liquefied natural gas fund, is that the, did that come out as before 138? That's not a report. Is it the small one or the bigger one?
I'm not really sure if it was, I don't remember which bill that came out of, or was related to the bullet line or the larger line, but I think it would work. It's designed so that any detail of any loan, 20% of royalties would go in. But I do not recall which
commented that this bond seems like something that is not very reasonable to talk about. Of course, it's one of the AGPC that is active and maybe less active than it was, but just a thought. Thank you.
Thanks so much. Next up, we're going to go to Lee Marks. Lee Marks, Freedom Legal, who's our officer and fellow that is providing to us the PowerSpell 2.3's support documents for students and legal level materials as well as for officer.
Thank you.
Explanation. So, as I'm looking at the bill, I think the question that I have in a single subject is for the effect of once the bill is into effect and there is some money left in some of these funds currently, you know, what happens to those funds? Is it a violation of the single subject, in your opinion, for those funds to be moved? To some other location. Now, I know historically there's been a distinction between appropriation bills and changes to statute. I can certainly see an argument where someone could tell the court that removing funds because the Fed no longer exists, which kind of seems to be part of the same subject. But what are your thoughts on that? It's your understanding that there's no way to accomplish that in this particular bill that would have to be a separate piece of legislation.
Transfer means
it is
6 of the presentation from the Department of State.
Funding and government efficiency commission has also called the city to come in. And with that, this meeting, we're going to have a special dinner at home, so maybe it's going to be